From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, as the nation is caught in the turmoil of an uncertain presidential election, how well did our time in civics class prepare us for these twists and turns and for Trumpism? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the days after the presidential election, with no immediate clear winner, many of us tried to recall the lessons that we learned in our civics, government, or social studies classes from many years ago. We were supposed to have been taught how our constitutional democracy works, that we have a system that is fair and will reflect the will of the people, but through a process of an electoral college. But is that what's really happening? Also, over the last few years of the Trump presidency, did our government actually work the way that we were taught? In civics classrooms today, students are coming to their teachers with questions about these current events. Sarah Swartz writes about this for Education Week. She co-authored with Madeline Will the article, Election Uncertainty and Anxious Students Inside Four Social Studies Classrooms.
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of anxiety among students. So a lot of students came into class with questions on Wednesday. One of the classrooms that my co-author was in, students were asking questions like, if President Trump refuses to accept a peaceful transition of power, if he loses the election, what will happen? Why are the polling results so different than what we're actually seeing in vote counts? And so teachers are sort of having to come up with answers to these questions on the fly. And then there are some questions that teachers can't really answer, like, when is the election going to be decided? That's something that teachers don't know. There's also a lot of anxiety from students who already hold really strong political beliefs and care strongly about a lot of issues. In one of the classes that I was in Chicago, it's a school in a largely Mexican-American community, and one of the students brought up some of the rhetoric around immigration that the president has some of the president's rhetoric around immigration, and said that he was worried about the president getting reelected. In one of the classes that my colleague was in, students brought up how preserving oil and gas jobs was really important in their area, and that they wanted President Trump to win because they thought that he would be able to preserve those jobs. So students they have really strong views and they want a candidate in office who is going to support the policy issues that they care about.
About what grade?
So we were in four different classrooms, one 10th grade classroom, one 11th grade, and then two 8th grade.
So it seems like these students are asking basically the same questions that we're all asking.
Absolutely. Yeah, they have a lot of the same fears and concerns and wonderings as adults do right now.
And these students are showing up with information that they may have picked up at home from around the kitchen table. And they have political ideas. And then they come to a classroom where a teacher is trying to explain our system of government, and sometimes their conflicts.
Absolutely. In one of the classes, the class in Pennsylvania, there was an issue where one of the students sort of came in with a little bit of misinformation, and the teacher was in a position where he had to figure out how to address that. So this was an eighth grade student who was saying that she didn't think mail-in voting was secure. She thought that there was a high chance of fraudulent ballots, and she thought that no matter who won the election, that the results would be invalid. And so the teacher sort of had to negotiate how to explain to her that, you know, when you look broadly at the research, there aren't substantiated instances of voter fraud, and sort of walk through that with her a little bit.
Research, you know, if you're taught that there's a deep state and that research is a suspect, you can't even believe the polls. Why would you believe research? So these government classes are so important in helping create the next generation of civilians who are engaged. But this is a harder uphill battle than when I was a student.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of teachers who I've spoken with over this fall have talked about how teaching government, teaching civics is really hard right now because it's such a polarized political climate. They have to be really cautious about what they say in class. And this wasn't a teacher I talked to for this story, but for another story I did about the election a little earlier, I was talking to a high school teacher in New York State, who said that he was kind of sad because students really were hesitant to bring up conflicting points of view in class because it's such a polarized environment right now.
Ideas like we have a system of checks and balances where the president and the Congress, these are co-equal branches of government. And if you watch what's happening in the news, you don't get that impression. It seems that that's not really what's happening anymore. And then we have a president who will spread misinformation along those lines that conflicts with what teachers are trying to teach about how the government operates. That puts teachers in a very difficult position.
Mm-hmm. I also spoke with with Carrie Sautner, who's the chief learning officer at the National Constitution Center, and she had some advice for teachers who are trying to navigate that kind of difficult situation. What do you do when emotions are running high? When you know, there might be misinformation out there? When things are very polarized? And she suggested really going back to the facts. What do we know? So explaining how the Electoral College works. That a candidate needs 270 votes to win, that what the schedule of events looks like from now until Inauguration Day, what does the process look like from this point on? And she said that conversations like that can kind of help the discussion stay grounded in facts and might even make students feel a little bit calmer if they sort of have a handle on the way that the process is supposed to work.
Well, the way the system's supposed to work, and then we're giving this other narrative in the classroom that we have a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And it doesn't. That's not really what's happening anymore. We don't have popular sovereignty. We have this mysterious electoral college. And we don't really have a government that's by the people, for the people, of the people. It's something different.
So I didn't get to sit down in any conversations about the Electoral College, but I wish I had. There was in the civics class in Chicago that I was in, they were having a conversation about the Electoral College today, Thursday. So it wasn't when I was there on Wednesday, but I talked to the teacher a little bit ahead of time, and he had explained to me that they've had a lot of conversations about the Electoral College. This is 11th and 12th graders, and whether the students think that it's a good way to decide our president, whether it's fair. I'm interested to check back in with him to see what some of their conversations were like today.
So do teachers feel like they can actually teach without having to deal with students' feelings of being hurt or having students feel like their basic beliefs that they may have picked up at home or at church are under attack?
I think they feel like they have to try because it's so, when I've talked to teachers, they said it's so important right now that, you know, if when society feels so polarized, that school can still hopefully be a place where, you know, we can have these civic conversations. One thing that one teacher brought up with me through the course of early reporting this year is that things are harder because of virtual learning. When students are learning from home, this teacher said he's seen people be a little bit more cautious, and he thinks it's because families walking around behind them, and they might overhear something that students say or that he says as a teacher, and he thinks that students are a little bit more on guard because of that. And so it's definitely more difficult now for sure, but I think teachers really still think it's really important.
Teaching civics, government, social studies, whatever you want to call it, do teachers wish they had more time to explore? Because it seems like it's kind of at the bottom of the list of things that need to be taught these days in school.
I'm not sure I really have an answer for that. Okay, one. Sure. I'm sorry.
I hear it all the time that, yeah, you know, we're not doing a very good job of teaching civics these days. And that's why we have some of the conflicts that we have now. We don't have an appreciation for civil discourse, and we have more violent outbursts, whether what's stealing someone's yard sign, one party or another, or is civil discussion, an exchange of ideas, a marketplace of ideas, voting for ideas that work for you. Therefore, we have a government that works. That's the idea, right?
Yeah, and I think that a lot of teachers really practice civil discourse as a routine, sort of giving kids the structure for how to have those conversations. One of the classes that I was in, an eighth grade class in Henry County in Georgia, which is kind of in the metro Atlanta area, the teacher started off the class with some classroom norms for having a civic discussion, that you speak from your own experience. You don't presume to speak from the experiences of other people. That if you come to a point where you sort of reach a standstill, that maybe you can agree to disagree on some issues, let people talk, that you don't, you know, hog all of the time in the conversation and share airtime. And so that was a really prominent piece of setting up this discussion for the students. It seemed important to her in that class.
It seems like something that we all could learn from.
I think so. I mean, I'm always, yesterday and always, I am impressed by the thoughtfulness and the curiosity that teenagers have about our democratic system.
Sarah Swartz is a reporter for Education Week. She co-authored with Madeline Will the article, Election Uncertainty and Anxious Students Inside Four Social Studies Classrooms. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. The fact that many in the nation are having disagreements about this democratic process, some are resorting to lies and violence to push their political positions, this could be an indication that there is a failure in how we have been teaching civics, government, and social studies. Well, we can't even agree on one name for this core subject, but it was where many of us learned the basic ideas of American government and what the red, white, and blue flag is supposed to stand for. So how do we teach civics in the classroom today? And does it need a boost or a reform to restore trust in democracy, the Constitution, and our elections? Dean Antonio Cantu is the Associate Dean at the Department of Education, Counseling, and Leadership at Bradley University and is the Executive Director of the Illinois Council for Social Studies.
The guiding document that many state departments of education use to articulate their state standards for social studies is the C3 framework. And they, in fact, if you look at the document, it starts off by saying, in a constitutional democracy, productive civic engagement requires knowledge of history, principles, and foundations of our American democracy and the ability to participate in civic and democratic processes. So again, that's a cornerstone of teaching government and civics today.
Most of the adults that we have who are involved in government today have been basically taught this, that we live in a democracy, people vote, and we have elections, and elections have consequences, they set policy. This is a basic fundamental foundation that we all are supposed to be sharing. And this comes from the time that we spent in the classroom where we were supposed to be explained to us.
Absolutely. That's, as individuals reflect back on their experiences as, K through 12 students, I think everyone goes back and remembers, their time in a government or civics class. But you're right. I think everyone has that takeaway, in terms of the emphasis on the study of American democracy, on the U.S. Constitution. You're right. I think that's part of the fabric that really defines social studies education and has defined it. I think one of the changes that we see, though, that's reflected in the 21st century, though, in the teaching of history and social studies, including government civics, is that there's a greater emphasis on the students themselves becoming historians or becoming political scientists and conducting their own inquiry and formulating their own questions that they want to research and then go out there and equipping them with the skills and the knowledge they need to conduct their research to be able to discern between evidence that they come across that is from a reliable, credible source and other evidence that may not be, and to be able to go through that vetting process along the way in trying to provide evidence in support of their position.
So we have these basic philosophical planks about a democracy and how it's supposed to work and why this is a good idea to have this form of government for us. And we have the Constitution, which is our agreement with each other and with our government, and whether it be a living document or a originalist view, depending upon who's sitting on the high bench at the time. Nowadays, though, it does seem like many of those basic ideas are being challenged. Checks and balances, it's being challenged. We know whether or not Congress has the right to do oversight of the president. That's being challenged. And the Supreme Court has weighed in, giving more power to the president. Do the basic things that we were taught, do they still apply?
That's a good question, because we do see what might appear to be deviations from at least previous events that when we study history or when we study the executive branch or the relationship between the executive branch and the legislative branch, for example, or the role of the judicial branch, every generation, has different events that appear to be cause for reinterpretation of the Constitution or constitutional powers. And so it's kind of, I wouldn't necessarily say what we are experiencing is all new. It's just it's been fit within a context that is perhaps more complex. So this isn't the first time we've seen it.
It does seem that when we teach these core ideas about how our government is supposed to work, checks and balances, electoral college, how that works up, there was not a direct democracy, not popular sovereignty, that doesn't apply in picking the president. Many ideas that we have about the way our government's supposed to work are being eroded. How do you teach Trumpism?
And that's a good question. I think you're right in that there could perhaps maybe government textbooks. There may be a need for a new chapter based on what we've experienced over the last few years.
Electoral college, we had been told, was supposed to be some sort of safety valve.
Right. And that's, I think that's a very valid debate and discussion that we're having, does it still serve the same purpose as it did when, you know, when it was implemented, or is it time to revisit something like that? So I don't
really. Or what about the right to peaceful protest? Does that still exist?
Well, I think you see that is, you know, at the forefront of a lot of the discussion that went on during the campaign, and I think on both sides of the aisle, I think there was a strong conviction, support, advocacy for peaceful protest.
But you turn on the TV and you see the news of people peaceful protesting being tear gassed and being arrested.
What that means that in the teaching of civics and government, those types of situations are being brought into the classroom by government teachers, by social studies teachers. And you're exactly right. Those are being discussed. Students are very sophisticated in terms of their analysis of what's going on. So many of them are very tech savvy. They're getting the information themselves. As opposed to, like I said, a generation or two ago, where students weren't necessarily asked to play that kind of an active role. They experienced situations where they were basically reading something in a textbook or listening to a teacher, and then for them that might have been their takeaway. You know, but now that's not their takeaway. Their takeaway is to have the skills they need and the knowledge they need to go out there and watch what you're talking about on social media, on television. That's not the role of a history, social studies, or government civics teacher, is to have you come in and simply adopt my view of the world.
Well, let me say, I mean, there is some benefit to that. If we all have an agreed upon idea of how the government is supposed to work, if we all have this shared philosophy that democracy is the best form of government, power supposed to flow from the people to the people that we select to represent us, those are things that are, those are truths.
Absolutely. We look to the government, you know, to protect our rights and civil liberties. We look to the Constitution to guide us in terms of governance, to guide us in terms of the type of society, the type of economy that we want. You're absolutely right. Those are core, you know, concepts form the foundation of American democracy, of our nation. So things like, you know, helping our students so that they have the knowledge of, you know, civic and political institutions, our processes, rules, laws, those are still part of it. Those are still what, you know, sometimes are referred to as the disciplinary tools, our concepts. But the key to that, though, is just acquiring that knowledge is not a terminal step in the teaching and learning process. In effect, we're tearing down the walls of the classroom, and we're saying the world we live in is our classroom, particularly when you're looking at government and civics. We're living it every day, and I think effective teaching of government and civics embraces that and uses that as part of the stage in which they're teaching their students.
We are living it every day. That is certainly, and probably more than we would like. But we're seeing big portions of our population that seem to be in support of a more of an authoritarian or strongman style of government, not so much into representational democracy when it doesn't go their way. I wonder if teaching civics, government, social studies has been getting shorter time spanned in schools over the last few decades, not as stressed as it has been in the past. Are we seeing the fact that some of these debates about some of the basic ideas of American philosophy and democracy and government, because we haven't been teaching enough civics and government over the past few decades?
That is a valid claim, and it certainly is based on a substantial amount of evidence. If you look at the teaching of what might be considered the four core subject areas of math and science and English language arts and social studies, which subsumed within is government and civics, there is no doubt that a greater emphasis has been placed on science and math, and particularly math and English language arts, and then science probably third. And social studies, typically, if you look at the amount of time that's spent teaching those four core subject areas, social studies invariably comes in last. In fact, study after study finds, particularly in elementary, that social studies gets a fraction of the time, and that there is a primary emphasis on what we would call English language arts, or reading and writing, as well as on math. And like I said, a distant third is science, and then dead last, unfortunately, far too often, is the study of social studies. At the high school level, you have different subject areas, but even if you go in and you look at what's required in different states, a lot of times certain subjects like government civics is a semester long course, so it counts as a 0.5 or half a year. So you're right. I mean, that is part of it, and it's very unfortunate because if you look at what's going on today, as you've mentioned, I've never seen a time where breadth and depth of knowledge of civics and government and the other social studies is of more critical import than it is today.
Do you hear from teachers these days who say they're kind of frustrated with teaching government that may need an update?
In terms of how are you defining an update?
Well, the government that we have isn't really reflective in the government that we teach.
I think that it is, I guess, given my background in having taught all of the social studies, but the primary sort of thread for me has been U.S. history. I think if you look at it though, you see, I think you would be hard pressed to find many examples of something that we're experiencing today that you wouldn't find we experienced as a nation over, the past, 250 years.
Sure. I mean, in the lead up to the Civil War, but I don't know if that's a good example.
Well, if you look at it in terms of, you talked about, you see individuals talking about constitutional rights, you see them talking about liberties, you see them talking about individual rights versus those of society. This is a fertile ground for the teaching of history and social studies. A good history, social studies, civics, government teacher doesn't shy away from controversial topics because we live in a world where it is just that. It is complex. It is dynamic. There are multiple perspectives. And so we need to help our students to understand that and to better look at those arguments and those discussions and those debates that are going on and try to distinguish or differentiate between those assertions, those claims that are based on factual evidence and others that are based on erroneous information or where they use fallacious argumentation to try to articulate their views.
Or violence. Using pickup trucks to run off campaign buses off the road, or just out and out brutal intimidation. That's supposed to be out of bounds, isn't it?
Absolutely. And those are in a civics and government class, the use of violence is never condoned. It's never sanctioned. It is a violation. Individuals can't use the Constitution as a basis for, engaging in violent acts. But again, it's something where that should be part of the discussion. And you're exactly right, that there are lines you do not cross.
Dean Antonio Cantu is the Associate Dean at the Department of Education, Counseling, and Leadership at Bradley University, and he is the Executive Director for the Illinois Council for the Social Studies. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters episodes, and you can find us wherever you download your podcast. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.